So if you think that, you know, you still live in a country where there's going to be some respect for your beliefs, you know, you could end up, you know, on the wrong end of a criminal prosecution.
Aaron Wren of the American Conservative talking about his presentation at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And so that might be, of course, unfair or in many ways, but it's also reality. If you don't understand the changes that have happened in the world, then you're not going to be able to make sense of what you see around you. And again, you might actually disadvantage yourself by taking actions that 20, 30 years ago would have been no big deal, but today might destroy your life.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wren making the case for Christianity in a negative world at this year's Making the Case conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. You'll find additional information and you can register at issuesetc.org.
Previous generations, by and large, got it right, that it's about family and marriage over career and money.
Which once again just teaches us one of the major laws of these podcasts. Politics is real. Religion, religious liberty, even the First Amendment, not so real.
Anytime the screen is on, talk time between parent and child goes down by 85%. Turn off your screens. Put your phones down. The iPad is not a pacifier.
On earth as it is in heaven, we pray that every time we pray the Lord's Prayer. And I think Jesus gave us that prayer to recognize that He is the link between heaven and earth. And wherever He is, those two things are joined together.
This is John in Michigan. And as a Lutheran high school teacher, I love listening to and using Issues Etc. in my classroom.
Should the U.S. government, in particular, the various departments of the Biden administration, be able to contact the social media companies, Google, Facebook, Twitter, now X, should they be able to contact them and dictate to them what should be on their platforms, what you say, what you see, what you hear there? Well, it's the subject of a Supreme Court case, Murphy v. Missouri. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, March the 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the Supreme Court case involving the Biden administration and online censorship. Joy Pullman of The Federalist will be our guest. We'll spend some time in conversation with Pastor Cameron Schaefer, author of a column for Mirror Orthodoxy titled How Do Our Kids Stay Christian? We'll talk about retaining children in the Christian faith. Then we'll begin a conversation on the paganization of America with John Daniel Davidson. He's author of the new book, Pagan America, The Decline of Christianity in the Dark Age to Come. Joy Pullman is executive editor of The Federalist, author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled, This Country Cannot Afford a Weak Supreme Court Decision on Internet Censorship. Joy, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the case recently heard before the U.S. Supreme Court, Murphy v. Missouri.
Well, this case originated basically in the kind of COVID era when it was slowly, people got hints about what this lawsuit uncovered. But, you know, there were some strange content moderation decisions by social media giants. They were increasingly shutting down even true information that was contrary to the government's line of things. And so what this lawsuit basically uncovered was that was not an accident, and it wasn't the social media companies acting on their own volition. They have and had been the recipients of a massive multi-agency federal pressure campaign, basically telling them what they should delete from the internet, what they should mute, what people in what ideas should not be allowed to spread, and threatened with the erasure of their entire business model if they did not comply.
So how was the Biden administration censoring free speech in particular? You say through various agencies. Do they have the receipts?
Yes. I mean, so that's what discovery in this case allowed, basically turning over thousands and thousands of pages of emails between 2 dozen agencies, if I'm not mistaken, at least a dozen officials from those agencies, years and years of correspondence, you know, for them saying, get rid of this post. This is a problem. Why aren't you taking this down? It was mostly behind the scenes, but it wasn't all of it. You had from the White House press podium, the White House press secretary, as well as President Biden himself saying, you know, that because they weren't censoring fast enough or taking down the things that the federal government wanted them to, they were killing people. That was the quote. They're killing people because you let people freely discuss all the information that may be available about COVID lockdowns. So there was individual requests from all these different agencies. And actually, this discovery that we're talking about in this case, it was somewhat limited. So this is tip of the iceberg sort of stuff, even though it's so many, many documents that were uncovered. So it's a pretty good bet that it wasn't just a couple dozen agencies. It's probably every single agency in the federal government has been engaged in this to some degree. And it's not only that, we also know that the federal government has been, so it's not just individual officials from agencies talking about specific posts. Also, the federal government has been doing a practice called switchboarding, where they develop these sometimes private, you know, it's been quasi-governmental kind of organizations whose job is to push for not just individual post censorship and topic censorship, but algorithmic, automatic computer AI generated censorship of the internet in real time. So that's opposed to, you know, the difference being rather than an official having to write an email, make a phone call to someone at a big tech company about a specific issue, what this is pressuring and embedding in these companies' algorithms automatic robotic detection of things that contradict government narratives and then pre-censoring them before they ever get the chance to spread now. So those two kind of ways have been created, sponsored, pushed by federal agencies, probably every single one of them.
What did the Biden administration attempt to do before, during, and after the Supreme Court hearing to muddy the waters?
Well, beyond, you know, doing this really breathtakingly unconstitutional operation, probably the largest in American history, to ban Americans from speaking and saying whatever they want to each other, which is a constitutionally protected right, they've really taken the line that what they're trying to do is really about terrorism. They're trying to protect people from harm. So, for example, during the Supreme Court arguments, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, she gave a hypothetical about, well, why couldn't the government stop, for example, if there was an internet challenge about kids jumping out of successively higher windows. She was claiming that this is all that the government is trying to do is just protect the people from obvious violent physical harm. And there were questions from other justices about, you know, well, wouldn't this limit the government's ability to stop the distribution of terrorist propaganda material and recruitment? And that is really a smokescreen for the fact that the vast majority, I bet, you know, if someone did a data analysis, because I've looked through these 20,000 pages of emails, you know, you look at them, more than 90%, at least 95%, have nothing to do with physical safety of American citizens, which already we have laws allowing government to take care of that problem. The vast majority of them are about the federal government weaponizing its power behind the scenes to tell companies, we're going to shut you down if you do not limit and stop Americans from engaging in constitutionally protected, peaceful free speech.
Does the First Amendment, its speech clause, apply to the federal government as the Biden administration lawyers attempted to argue before the court?
No, that's a complete inversion of the reason for the existence of the Constitution. The Constitution exists to restrain the government so that the people can have freedoms secured to them. The federal government does not have free speech rights, and that's not the point of the First Amendment. The point of the First Amendment is, in fact, to secure the pre-existing free speech rights of the people. So, and because the people, the citizens of the United States have our free speech may not be abridged, not only not just curtailed, but the government really cannot interfere with our speech in practically any way, except for very limited cases, such as a direct incitement to violence. Outside of that, you know, pretty much we get to say whatever we want in this country. And the government speech, on the other hand, people who are acting in their official capacity as a member of the government, they are limited by the First Amendment in their own speech from acting against any of Americans' constitutional rights. So the Biden administration's lawyer basically claimed that, you know, well, this is the government using its free speech too. You know, this is nothing coercive. This is just, you know, using the bully pulpit. That would turn the Constitution on its head, and it is a false depiction of what's really going on in this case.
How were the media active in aiding and abetting the Biden administration's censorship on the internet?
Well, for one thing, you know, they have been spreading the federal government's claims that if the Supreme Court bans this censorship enterprise, then all of a sudden the federal government will not be able to stop terrorism. That's just a flat out lie. We did not have censorship abilities over the internet during the war on terror under President George W. Bush, and there was no such censorship operation going on, and it was not necessary in order to fight terrorism during that era and going forward. Not only has the media active in basically propagating lies from the federal government about that cover its real desire to censor, which is to control the American people, they also really function as kind of little seek and destroy missile carriers on behalf of the government, frankly, because, you know, they're allied with the government because the government is largely controlled by the left, by the Democratic Party. So the media is basically the propaganda and the speaking arm of the Democratic Party. And so they function on behalf of that government party to basically ferret out things that the government should go after. So, for example, I work at The Federalist, as you mentioned in your opening. We have had, you know, media outlets basically push smear jobs done by allegedly private organizations claiming that we're sponsors of hate speech. Hate speech is basically a weasel word to basically say speech the left doesn't like, true speech. But the media basically functions as a search and destroy, uses its power and its mouthpiece to tell the government where to go after and to suppress. So for example, at The Federalist, we had the Google pull its ads from us, depriving us of lots of revenue, of being able to function, because I think it was MSNBC report used an attack report claiming that we baselessly, falsely, that the Federalist sponsors hate speech. And not only that, you know, these sorts of reports that are basically used to smear anybody who is to the political right of far left Biden administration, the federal government now is weaponizing those as well to classify people who disagree with the federal government as domestic terrorists. And I know that sounds extreme, but that is the documented reality. If folks are interested in that, they can look up information from the House Weaponization Committee. It has a number of multi-page reports talking about how all of these allegedly private organizations and the media and the people in the government kind of work to create this revolving door of find and punish anyone who disagrees with them. Again, not because the people who disagree with them are planning any sort of illegal action or violence, but because they want to have unilateral power, and it is a threat to their power for people to publicly have the ability to disagree with them and point out how they get their facts wrong many times.
So did the justices seem to understand what's at stake here? What was your read on that?
I always have to include the caveat, you know, in oral arguments that sometimes they don't really kind of telegraph what the final opinion is going to be. That's about the only hopeful thing, honestly, that really, not the only, you know, but the brightest spot of oral arguments, because a number of the justices you would expect from the far left wing of the court, such as Ketanji Brown Jackson, I mean, she literally complained about the way that the Constitution operates to restrict the government. She said that the First Amendment was hamstringing the government as a complaint, when that is the actual deliberate, purposeful function of the Constitution and the First Amendment. So you would expect that from that wing of the court. But we also heard from justices such as Amy Coney Barrett, from Justice Brett Kavanaugh, from Chief Justice John Roberts. They were also seeming to buy into the Biden administration's false claims that its censorship activity, the bulk of them, have anything to do with, you know, actual legitimate government interests such as stopping terrorism. And, you know, they asked a number of questions related to that as well. So, I mean, obviously the justices on the Supreme Court are highly intelligent, very well-versed in a lot of issues, but I really, really hope that they did read the legal briefs, all the voluminous evidence here that really showed that the federal government was lying and putting up a smokescreen for its actual activities in these oral arguments.
You mentioned this before, but explain yourself. You say that every one of the Biden administration's excuses for censorship already has a law. It's already illegal.
Right. So as I mentioned, you know, the excuse that, oh, well, we need to stop Americans from saying what they think on communications monopolies, from sharing information and having their voices heard on basically what is the public square. You know, the only way to really get traction on a public issue nowadays is through social media, through, you know, YouTube, through X, through Facebook. through TikTok. These are the ways that government officials basically take their marching orders. And, you know, it's their sounding board, you know, from what they think that the people want, because they don't have a lot of town halls anymore. So these forums are really, really important in controlling what our government does. And so the government claims that, oh, well, we need to stop Americans from talking to each other because, you know, oh, some of them say stuff that we don't like. Some of them say things that we think is false, so on and so forth. But the problem is for the Biden administration that if there is some actual evil thing happening, such as people recruiting, you know, kids to be trafficked on social media, such as I mentioned earlier, you know, recruiting people and spreading terrorist propaganda, all of that is already legal. Not only that, but it is not the job of Facebook. Facebook is an intermediary in those situations, and it's not, Facebook isn't responsible for what people use Facebook to do on it. I do think they have a little bit of responsibility, but the bulk of the responsibility, you know, for someone recruiting for terrorism or trying to lure a kid to run away from his home into the arms of traffickers, the responsibility for that is the bad guy doing that on Facebook or X, right? And they have the legal power to go after those traffickers, to go after those terrorists. That is already written into law, is well provided for. We have complete national security apparatus funded by the tune of billions of dollars to take care of problems like these. And then if you look at the record in this case, like I said, the vast majority of the speech that is censored had nothing to do with what the government keeps claiming to the media and is claiming to the Supreme Court is the reason they have to have the power to shut Americans up online. So the conclusion of all of that really is like that the government doesn't need anything else to prosecute terrorism. It doesn't need censorship to prosecute terrorism. And in this country, you know, we have faced wars, pandemics, we've faced foreign invasions, all kinds of things, never needing the power to ban Americans from talking to each other, which again is against the Constitution. And so the government wants to continue to lie about this to Americans in order to cover up the fact that it really is doing something blatantly unconstitutional and really destructive of the claim that America is a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. And we cannot control our government if we can't even talk to each other about what our government is doing and our ideas about it.
Joy Pullman is our guest. We're talking about a Supreme Court case involving the Biden administration and online censorship. We'll talk about the Biden administration's complaint regarding the auditing of their communications next.
So if you think that, you know, you still live in a country where there's going to be some respect for your beliefs, you know, you could end up, you know, on the wrong end of a criminal prosecution.
Aaron Wren of the American Conservative talking about his presentation at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And so that might be, of course, unfair or in many ways, but it's also reality. If you don't understand the changes that have happened in the world, then you're not going to be able to make sense of what you see around you. And again, you might actually disadvantage yourself by taking actions that 20, 30 years ago would have been no big deal, but today might destroy your life.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wren making the case for Christianity in a negative world at this year's Making the Case conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. You'll find additional information, and you can register at issuesetc.org.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Hello, this is Roy Askins, editor of the Lutheran Witness. One of our goals is to help you, as I say all the time, interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective, and that includes interpreting our contemporary culture and the major writings that have informed it. If you haven't already, you need to check out the Lutheran Witness website and see our series on literary reflections, where we have commented on works such as Huckleberry Finn, To Kill a Mockingbird, the writings of Jane Austen, and more. Visit witness.lcms.org/series to read the whole thing. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Christ's resurrection transformed grief into joy. His resurrection does the same for us. The death of a loved one can be devastating. We find comfort in knowing the souls of believers are with the Lord, and our joy increases when we celebrate the promise that in Christ shall all be made alive. From the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for March, Unfailing, God's Assurance for Times of Change. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Give them a call, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for Unfailing. Or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. It's the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for March, Unfailing. Joy Pullman is our guest, executive director of The Federalist. We're talking about a Supreme Court case involving the Biden administration and online censorship. Joy, what do you make of the Biden administration's complaint there at the court about the auditing of their communications?
Right. And that was a kind of a, I mean, I had to laugh a little bit listening to oral arguments when the government's attorney, Brian Fletcher, was making that argument as if it was a bad thing to have citizen oversight of what the government does with our money and our institutions. That, again, that is a basic American principle of public transparency. And as a journalist, I know, right? So I do this all the time. I do open records requests. We have laws in this country that say that I paid for the emails being done on government time by government workers. You paid for it. And so we have a right to know what anyone working for the government is doing with our money and our resources and with the offices that they are privileged to occupy. So again, the Biden administration basically is complaining about the fact that the Constitution and basic American institutions such as transparency about government actions, they don't like those restrictions on their actions. But that is kind of a frightening thing because it indicates how authoritarian they are and how little that they want to respect the norms of this country, not only the norms, but the laws that ought to be binding our government. And what binds the government is a protection for the people. You know, so we see that the Biden administration, they want to secretly be able to shut you up and not able to organize people. For one of the plaintiffs in this case was literally prevented from using Facebook to gather groups of people to talk about their disagreement with some of the government's policies. That is a classic of the freedom of assembly is another, you know, is a basic American natural right that our founders believed that government exists to protect. And instead of government protecting all of these fundamental natural human rights that we as Americans are supposed to have secured, what we have in this case is the government destroying those natural rights, abusing them, and thereby in trying to invert the system of government of and by the for the people and make us into the servants of the government rather than the government the servants of the people.
The Biden administration attempted to say that they were simply practicing persuasion. How do you respond to that?
Oh, that was one of my favorite arguments, saying, well, it refers to the discussion that you and I had, you know, at the top of the program about the government just using its speech here. But as I mentioned, the government, you know, its speech must be limited to the extent that that speech may abuse the people's free and open speech rights. The government does not have the right to free speech. But on the persuasion versus coercion thing, also, you have to understand that the standard here is not the government persuading or coercing or drawing all these kinds of lines like this. The First Amendment states that the people's right to speak must not be abridged. It doesn't say that the government must not abridge it persuasively or it must not abridge it coercively or that there's any distinction there. No, abridgment is a far, far wider and broader distinction than the government was trying to make. So even in trying to say that there is some difference between the government persuading versus coercing these big tent companies, the government is already completely across the constitutional line that says not only, you know, that can you not coerce, you cannot persuade, you cannot abridge. So any government communication or action that tends to abridge the people's speech is unconstitutional, and that's obvious from the text of the Constitution. And I think that latter point there just really goes to the heart of the matter here is that the government really, really, really wants to be able to stop Americans from talking to each other, which again, that inverts our system of government. We, the people, are supposed to be in charge and we cannot be in charge of our government if we don't know what they're doing and if we cannot know what they're doing and if they get to decide when we can talk to each other, how we can talk to each other and put pressure on the intermediaries of our speech to silence us.
How does all of this connect to the proposed TikTok legislation that's currently being considered?
Well, I think that's a really interesting connection because I'm thinking, how much time do you have here? That is a very attractive sounding piece of legislation that is very dangerous because it has a number of poison pills inside it. You know, basically, the whole effort is attempting to use a very sympathetic issue to smuggle in something that's very dangerous to Americans' rights. Of course, nobody supports the Chinese Communist Party having detailed data about American citizens. Anyone who's decent is against that. But also, you know, we shouldn't support having the U.S. government act in a Chinese communist way to do the same thing that the Chinese Communist Party does to its own and foreign citizens to American citizens. And so the bill to basically turn the control of TikTok over to an American company and thereby the federal government basically is essentially attempting to take a Chinese communist weapon into a U.S. government weapon. So I see this as a power struggle between the rulers of America and the rulers of China over who gets to censor and control and distort and manipulate Americans through their data. But the last thing to think about there, I think, that's pertinent to this court case is that the bill itself that was passed through the House allows the federal government to take over any social media company that it claims is owned by a foreign company. Now, look, Facebook, X, many of these large tech companies are international global companies, right? Most of them have some kind of foreign ownership at the very least, if nothing else, you know, through its stock ownership. So, but the idea is basically if the federal government's regulators decide that you have too much foreign control of a social media, then they get to nationalize that forum. So again, that's another mechanism that allows if the Supreme Court doesn't rule for the free speech of Americans for against the federal government being able to insert itself and into all of our online communications, then that basically is creating yet another power center and a censorship point for the federal government to impose on Americans.
How do you expect the court to rule?
You know, I really tend to not make predictions like that because I'm going to inevitably be wrong. I think that the briefs in this case are so very strong, and the lower court's rulings based on the evidence have also been very strong, very quick, and I believe unanimous at the appellate court level. So on the merits, it seems very clear that the constitutional thing to do is to prohibit the government from telling big tech companies, nice little company you got there, if you want to keep having a monopoly, you know, that you get by serving at the pleasure of the federal government, you better do this, do this, do this, do this, and shut Americans up and set algorithms on them and erase the ability to talk about, you know, these topics that we don't like. It seems clear that if the justices on the facts that have been serviced in this case, if they rule on that, then they have to rule that the First Amendment does not allow government to engage in that behavior. But, you know, a lot of people who come from my political perspective have seen the Supreme Court do a lot of great things. I mean, Roe versus Wade is biggest one of my lifetime, really major thing. But that doesn't mean that the Supreme Court is super strong. It, in fact, really has a very weak center. And this is one of the issues in which they really could go horribly wrong. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I really would hope that and pray that the justices do vote on the merits and the facts of the case.
Joy Pullman is executive editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled This Country Cannot Afford a Weak Supreme Court Decision on Internet Censorship. You can read it and purchase The Education Invasion at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Joy, thanks.
Thank you.
Pastor Cameron Schaefer joins us on the other side to talk about de-churching and retaining children in the Christian faith. What can we learn from Old Testament prophet Samuel on how to endure through tumultuous times? Find out in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Unfailing, God's Assurance for Times of Change. This book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Unfailing at issuesetc.org. Unfailing, God's Assurance for Times of Change, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Luther Academy provides additional theological education for our mission partners around the world, specifically pastors who are asking for additional education but do not have the necessary resources in their own church bodies. By donating to Luther Academy today, you will be supplying food, housing, books, professors, and travel for Lutheran pastors who attend our conferences. To learn more about Luther Academy and how you can donate today, visit lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Imagine this. What if you planned your vacation? You picked the location based upon where you knew there was a good Lutheran church. Well, we're here to let you know that if you're planning a Southern Oregon vacation, whether you visit Crater Lake, raft the Rogue, fish for salmon, or head down to the Redwoods, there's still a place for you to receive forgiveness. Faith Lutheran Church in Rogue River, Oregon. What's a vacation without the gospel? Faith Lutheran Church, Sundays at 10 a.m. Visit faithrogueriver.org.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.